Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chulin Daf Yud Aleph. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the Daf before the shiur. And even better, order your personal volume of this Maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. As we notice the top of Daf Yud Aleph, the second line from the top, we have a diamond with a colored-in tip, which is in effect a continuation of a series that we started on the previous Omid. These were represented the search for the basis of various principles, famous principles that exist in Talmudic law. In our previous shiur, we discussed the issue of chazaka. From where do we know that we maintain or we decide an area of doubt based on previous known status? Here we deal with the deciding of a matter of doubt based on the majority, the rove. We have a topic heading that accompanies this Gemara. You'll find this in the outside margin under the heading No Say. Under this heading No Say, which we've also indicated goes till Daf Yud Beis. In other words, this is a fairly long sugya as far as the Gemara is concerned. It goes until Yud Beis Omid Aleph, and we've written what the topic is: Mokor Loleches Boser Roiv Beruba Deleso Kamon. We're looking for a source that would tell us to follow the majority in a case where the majority is not something that's sitting in front of us. The Gemara will point out that with regard to a majority that's in front of you, and the most common example of that would be a court case where you have a decision in which you have a majority holding one opinion and a minority holding the other. That's a ruba de iso kamon. It's a robe that is in front of us. For that, we have a pasuk in the Torah. Achrei rabim lahatois. What the Gemara will be interested in is cases of a rove that exists out there in the big world, and I am to follow that in defining or in determining an area of doubt. As we go on in the Gemara, we will notice numerous diamonds, and they are featured under our Mivneh heading, also on the outside margin. Mivneh meaning structural note. In our Gemara marking system, we attempt to explain the structural notes as they appear. And we will explain that those diamonds are Hochachos or Mekoros, Dazlinun Bosor, Rov, Verubo, Deleso, Kamon. These are proofs that we'd follow the Rov, that type of majority. As in the opening a few examples, the Gemara will reject them, and we will feature those rejections with a double underline. And you can see that as you skim ahead on the page, all of these different markings. So now we start the Gemara, after having presented the overview of the next daf. Mino ho milso, the Omer Rabbonon, from where do we know that which the Rabbonon say, zil boser ruba, follow the majority. So the Gemara at this point doesn't make any distinction and wonders why are we asking this question to begin with. So it responds, min alon, from where? Dichti, the pasuk says, achrei rabim lahatos. The answer to that is quite obvious, so obvious that why are you even asking about it? So the Gemara responds, as far as our question is concerned, it is not dealing with what the pasuk is dealing with. Ruba de Isa Kamon, an example of a rove, a majority that is in front of us. Kegon, Teisha Chanuyos. The case of Teisha Chanuyos is a situation where you have a row of meat stores, of butcher shops. And let us say of 10 butcher shops. nine of which sell kosher meat, and one of them sells unkosher meat, and you find a piece of meat outside the shops. So we say that the piece of meat that you found outside the shops must have come from the majority, from one of the stores that represents the majority. So even though one of the shops is selling unkosher meat, you can eat the meat that you found outside in the street because the majority of the shops sell kosher meat. Well, those are a majority of shops that are in front of us. That's a ruba de iso kamon. Iso that are kamon, in front of us. A second example, the Sanhedrin, the case of the court, where you have in a standard court of, let's say, 23 judges. That's the type of court that will judge cases of capital concern, capital cases. And if you have a split decision of 13 judges saying one way and 10 judges saying another, I will follow the opinion of the 13 judges. They represent the majority, and they are, in fact, in front of us. They are sitting there on the court. So these cases of Ruba Diso Kamon, like Tesha Chanuyos and Sanhedrin, lo ka mi bayalon. We're not asking about the source for that we follow the rove there, because, in fact, that's what the Pasuk is addressing. Ki ka mi bayalon, Ruba de Leso Kamon. What we are interested in is how do I know, or what is the precedent for following a majority when the majority exists out there in the wide world, namely, it's not in front of me. Kagoin, Koton uktano minolon, like the cases of Koton and Ktano. This is a very brief reference to a much larger sugya. Rashi features the background to this, Koton uktano. If we glance at the Rashi, in the upper part of the narrow lines, we will notice that we're dealing with the case of Yibum. Case of Yibum is a situation where a person died, leaving no children. The widow that is left is expected to marry the surviving brother of her husband, her brother-in-law. And of course, this is a halacha when, as we said, the couple that the husband died left no children. So Rashi says, Katan uktano, the pligi rabbonon oleid Rabbi Meir b'Yevamos. The rabbonon disagree with the opinion of Rabbi Meir in Yevamos. The snan, it teaches in a Mishnah, Yavam katan shebo al Yevam uktano. Minors, a boy who's under bar mitzvah, who had relations with a ktana, who is underage. Yigdalu ze im ze. Let them grow up together. Velo chayshinon shemo timsa islandis o hu soris. And we are not going to factor or consider that the girl may turn out to be an islandis. This is a woman incapable of reproduction, or he turn out to be a sterile male. And if that would be the case, if he or she would turn out to be one of these types of deficient characters, v'nimtza pogea b'eishes ochiv shelo b'mokom mitzvah. The whole point of Yibum is to procreate, and we, as the Torah says, to produce an offspring who will carry the name, so to speak, of the deceased. And therefore, if you have one of the sides of the pair is incapable of reproduction, so the mitzvah of Yibum wouldn't apply. But now, since they are ketanim, we don't know how they are going to develop into their adult years. So the Rabbanan say, we let them stay together, even though there is a chance that he, the fellow, might turn out to be a sterile male, or she may turn out to be an islandess, a woman incapable of reproduction. If that would happen, so as Rashi says, it would turn out to be poyebeishes ochiv shelo b'malka mitzvah, a relationship of brother and sister-in-law in a non-mitzvah scenario, namely a non-yibum situation. Deboi lahokim lochiv shem. As we said before, the whole purpose of yibum is to establish an offspring or to carry on the name of the deceased, so to speak. V'hai lav bar hochihu, the sterile individual is not capable of that. Nevertheless, we don't worry about that. Elo amrinon. We say zil boso rov tanim de'alma de'enom srisim ano rubo de'lesa kamon. We say follow rov, the majority of children do not develop into sarisim. So we let this couple, according to the Rabbanan, who disagree with Rabbi Meir, we let them stay together based on the fact that the majority of children of the world do not develop into sarisim. That's a ruba de leso kamon. Turning now to the Gemara, the question is, how do we know that we are to follow such a majority, the majority that's not in front of us? Omar Rabbi Lozer, Asya me resha shel ola. So you notice the first diamond that appears. This is, of course, in distinction to the diamond that we had used with the colored end tip. That's a different marking. Here is the diamond that is the first in the attempts to bring a source for this, that we follow the rove. You know, ruba de lesa kamon. So he says we learn it from the din of the ola sacrifice, me resha shel ola, from the head of an ola sacrifice. An ola sacrifice is an animal that's slaughtered and eventually cut up into sections, and those sections are put into the fire on the altar, completely burnt. The pasuk says, "V'diomar kro v'nitach oisa l'nosocheha." You are supposed to dismember the animal, the sacrifice, into its various body parts. And we darshan here, we expound on this pasuk, oisa l'nesocheh, v'lo nesocheh l'nesochim. The animal is cut into parts, but once the parts of the animal are established, the head, the legs, the other different sections, once they are established and cut into their respective sections, the sections are not to be further cut down. That's v'lo nesocheh l'nesochim. For example, and the example the Gemara will deal with, once you have the head of the animal that's removed from the body, it's supposed to remain a complete head, not cut up further. Ah, but v'nechu shem onikiv krum shel moyach, should I not worry about the possibility of the brain's surrounding membrane? That's the krum shel moyach. The krum is the membrane around the moyach, around the brain. Maybe nikev means maybe it developed a hole in the brain membrane constitutes an example of a trefa, and a trefa is unacceptable as a sacrifice. So now I have this korban ola, I cut it up into its various different body parts. How do I know that the animal is not a trefa? Maybe there's a hole in the brain membrane. And I can't open up the head to check it out because of this gzeris hakasa v'lo nisocheho linisochim. I can't cut the body parts into subdivisions. Elolav mishum damrinon zil basaruba. The only way that I'm considering this as an acceptable sacrifice is based on the fact that I'm going to follow the majority. And the majority of animals, and they're not in front of us, the majority of animals out there in the big world, are not animals that have a nekiv in the krum shel moyach. The Gemara rejects this. Mimai. Who says that from the case of the ola, the rosh shel ola, I really see this? Dilma de poli lei ubonak lei. Maybe I split open the skull of the animal and I check out the membrane. The e mishum, and if you'll say, well, you can't do that because oisol inesocheh v'lo nesocheh l'nesochim, because of the gzeris hakosef we just had before, that you cut it, the animal, into its parts, and its parts are not allowed to be cut further, any further. Hani mili hecho de chotich le legamrei. That restriction is when you completely cut it apart, cut it completely. Avol hecho de layif, where you split. Let us say you split open the skull, leaving part of it still attached. Less lon ba, then there would be no problem of oisal l'nesocheh v'lo nesocheh l'nesochim. Less lambo means there would be no problem. And therefore, if you have a korban ola, I can split open the skull, keep it partially attached, check out the membrane, and establish that way that there's no nekev in the krum shel moyach, in the brain membrane. and not necessarily a function of my relying on the majority. That brings us on to the next attempt. Mor brei d'Ravina Omar, Asya mishviras etzen bePesach. We can establish that we are expected to follow the majority, the roiv, ruba the lesser kamon, when it comes to a korban Pesach. Now, with regard to the korban Pesach, the Torah says you're not allowed to break its bones. You're not allowed to chop bones of a korban Pesach. Well, being that there is an iser in chopping the bones, v'nechu shemo nikiv krum shel moach, maybe is there not room for me to suspect maybe the brain membrane of the korban Pesach has a hole in it, making it into a trefa and hence an unacceptable sacrifice, and yet we don't worry about that. Elolav mishum damrina zil basaruba. Rather, it must be because we say follow the majority, and the majority of the world's sheep and goats do not have holes in their brain membranes. The Gemara again rejects this and says, Mimai, who says that my acceptance of the Korban Pesach in light of the possibility of a Nekeh B'Krum Shamoch is a function of Rov? Dilma demonach gomrasa ole v'koli le ubodik le. Maybe what they do is you take a hot coal, a gomrasa is a coal, and burn open the skull, exposing the brain, and check it out that way. And as far as the issue of etzem lo sishmurubo, apparently, and we'll see this very shortly, that burning is not a violation of the posuk. Disanya, the Tanaic source, you can see, appears in a frame as we mark off all Tanaic sources as they appear in our Gemara marking system so as to set the Tanaic sources apart from the rest of the Gemara. Here, we have a Tanaic source that deals with the issue of burning the bones. Hamachatech begidin vasoref batzamos, one who cuts the tendons, or one who burns the bones, ein bo mishum shviras etzem. There is no violation of the prohibition of breaking bones. Therefore, as far as the skull and the brain membrane is concerned, it can be checked out. And therefore, the acceptance of the Korban Pesach and not concerning ourselves with the trefus is a function of our checking it out and not a function of our relying on the majority. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok Omar, Asya mei Aliya. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok suggests that we can discover the fact that we do rely on a rove from the case of the Aliya. The Aliya is the tail of a sheep offering, a korban that you bring as a sheep. A sheep has what's called a fat tail. That's the Aliya, and that's expected to be put onto the Mizbeach. And Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok says, we learn from the Aliya, Asim al Damar Rachmona Chelbo Ho Aliya Temimo. That means that the tail must be offered in a complete form, Temimo, completely. The Lechu Shemo Nifsika Chut HaShedra, the tail is the end of, contains the end of the spine. Should I not concern myself that maybe the spinal cord is severed? And that is also an example of one of the trefus that the Torah prohibits and would be forbidden as a korban. So is that not a concern? Elolav, the fact that we offer the chel of ha'aliyah and not worry about there being a hefsik in the chut shashedra, Mishum Damina Zil Basarubo, because we rely on the majority, and the majority of animals don't have a hafsok in the chut shel shedra. The chitema, you might say, the mitzoi posik law, that in offering the aliyah comes from a part very low down. If the animal, let's say, is standing up with head in the air, hanging or suspended from the head, so toward the bottom of the animal would be the tail, You might say that if the aliyah is offered from a section that's very low on the animal. Mitzi means very low, a point at which the spinal cord wholeness is of no concern. When we mentioned a moment before that a severed spinal cord presents a problem of trephus, that is true if it's sufficiently high up on the back of the animal. However, if it's very close to the end of the animal, if a spinal cord is cut, at that point it does not cause trephus. So you might say that when the whole issue of offering the aliyah doesn't get involved with an issue of relying on the rove whatsoever. Rather, the issue of the aliyah simply doesn't concern trephus at all, because the aliyah is offered from a point, it's cut from a point of the back of the animal that the trephus issue doesn't even arise. To that, the Gemara says that's not even true. L'umas ha'otza amrachmona, mokom shakloyos yo'atzois. The Pasuk says that the aliyah is taken from, it includes the tail, but the point on which, the point on of the animal from which the aliyah is cut, it's cut fairly high on the back of the animal, the area above the kidneys. That's what's meant by the expression le'umas he'otze, from above, le'umas from opposite, where the otze is a term referring to the kidneys, and the idea contained in the Gemara is mokum sha'klos yo'atzos. There's a certain figure of speech, and that the kidneys are the source of counsel, yo'atzos is the word indicating counsel. But for our purposes, what we have to focus on is that the tail is removed with spine material up till the area above the kidneys, and that's an area that trephus does figure, could occur. In other words, a severed spinal cord at the area above the kidneys on the animal's back would create trephus, and yet we don't seem to be worried about that. And what is it that allows us to offer the aliyah without worrying about maybe it's a trepha? So it is because we rely on the rove, and rove animals do not have severed spinal cords. The Gemara rejects this. Mimai, who says that this is proof that we rely on the rove? Dilma de Pasach law ubodik law. Maybe they open it up and check it out. They split open the spine. And if you object to that possibility, because the pasuk said tamima meaning whole, complete, hanimili hechad chotcha legamri, this would be a problem if you completely cut it open, completely into two, you separate it into two separate parts. Avol hechad delayif less lanba, if you split open the spine, the vertebrae, leaving them still attached. In other words, you split them open and leaving them partially attached. That's life. Then we are not we don't see this as a violation of tamima, but at the same time, I am able to check out the wholeness of the spinal cord. So the fact that we're offering the aliyah and not concerning with it being a trefa isn't a function of our relying on the rove. It's a function of our having checked it out. Rav Sheshes Braid, Rav Idi, Omar, Asya be'eglo arufa. Now you notice in the markings that we don't have a marking, as the Gemara goes on, indicating rejection, a dechia, which we were indicating with the double underline as we have been going along. And that is because we in fact will have examples of things that are relying on the rove. So Rav Sheshes Brei Ravini says, Amar Asya Me Eglo Arufa. We will learn that we rely on the rove. In the case of the Eglo Arufa is a religious ceremony whereby a calf is brought, in the case of a situation where a murder victim is found between two cities, the closer city is expected to bring a calf, and we're not talking about a sacrifice in the Beis HaMikdash, but rather that's why we use the word a ceremony or a ritual, where a calf is brought to an uncultivated piece of land and its neck is chopped by a hatchet from behind the neck. That's the process of Eglo Arufa. Arufa is it indicates the breaking, the cutting of its head. The Omar Rachmona, the Pasuk says, Ho Arufa, Kishi Shlema Tehave. The animal, the calf that you bring for this ceremony must be Shlema, must be complete. Certainly excluding a Trefa. Ah, Valechush Dilma Trefahi. Should I not suspect maybe it is in fact a Trefa, and I'm still bringing it? Elo Lav, Mishum Damrina Zil Basaruba. So the answer to that is that I'm not going to suspect maybe it's a trefa because I am going to be relying on the majority. And rove animals are not trefas. The chitemo mai nafgamina. You might ask, who cares in the case of the egla rufa? After all, it's not a sacrifice. A sacrifice is something that I have to concern myself, maybe it's a trefa and hence it would be unacceptable. The Eglah Rufa is not done in the Beis HaMikdash. It's done at a spot between the it's not in a spot outside on an uncultivated piece of land. So you'll say that this doesn't serve as an example because I'm not relying on a majority, because I don't need to rely on a majority, because even if it's a trefa it would be okay. The Gemara says that's not true. It must be trefa free. Ha amri debei Rabbi Yanai kapora ksiv bo kikochim. The Torah, in describing the parsha of the Eglah Rufa, uses the word kapora. Kapora means atonement, and that word is symbolic of kochim, of sacrifices, which also come for atonement purposes. And therefore, we do apply a kochim standard to the Eglah Rufa, namely that it must be trefa free. Ah, maybe there is a trefa problem in this egel. So the answer is we are relying on the rove. And here you can see the Gemara with regard to this example, the egel rufa is happy with this answer. We are relying on the rove. We should point out that in the Rashi it says my nafgamina e trefa hi, who cares, we asked, if it's a trefa. Ha'olav korban hu, it's not a sacrifice. Ume ho'arufa lo nafka elo she tehe lo'olam ke'ein arifa shelo yinaschen levorim. That from the word ho'arufa I am to learn that it's supposed to be complete, and indicating I shouldn't dismember it into various body parts like I do by a korban ola. Aval trefus mechayim lo shamino mino, but we don't learn from that the restriction of a trefa, an animal that was, while it was still alive, it was already a trefa. So we eventually said in the case of the Eglah Rufa that the trefa consideration does exist because the Torah uses the word kapora. And why is it that I'm not checking it out? Why is it? The answer to that is because I am relying on the rove. The Gemara continues with other examples. Rabo va Rav Shilo Omar Asyo mi poro adumo. We can learn that we rely on the rove to establish that it's not a trefa from the case of Pora Aduma. Pora Aduma is the red cow that is slaughtered opposite the Beis HaMikdash. It's not a korban. It's slaughtered opposite the Beis HaMikdash. Its ashes, after it's burnt, are used to be mixed with water from a live spring, and eventually that mixture is sprinkled on people who are Tomei Meis. So we learn from the Pora Aduma, the Omar Achmona V'Shochat V'Soraf. Just like when it's slaughtered, it must be complete. In fact, the animal that's brought as a red heifer must be free of any blemishes. It must be a complete, healthy animal. So too, when the animal is burnt, it's burnt in a whole fashion, complete fashion. Maybe I should consider that or suspect that there is a trephus in this animal. The fact that I don't worry about maybe it's a trepha is established by the rov. And rov animals are not trepha. The chitemo mai nafgamino. You might ask, who cares whether it's a trepha or not? After all, it's not a sacrifice, and therefore, even if it were a trepha, it should be acceptable. So to this, the Gemara answers, chatos karya rachmona. The Torah calls the Parah Aduma a chatos. And being that it's called a chatos, chatos is the name of a standard korban, a sin offering korban. Since the Parah Aduma is called by the same name as a common sacrifice, we treat it with sacrificial standards. And being that that's the case, trephus would ruin it. Ah, how can I then go ahead with the whole Parah Aduma process? Maybe it's a trepha. So to that we say we rely on the rov, and rov animals are not trephus. Rav Acho bar Yankiv Omar, Asyo Misoyer Hamishtaleach. We are going to learn that we rely on the rov from the case of the goat sent away on Yom Kippur to the cliff where it's pushed off and thereby atones for the sins of Israel. We should have pointed out earlier, but it's never too late, that as far as the Egla Rufa and the Parah Aduma are concerned, when the Drosha said it shall remain Shlema, that in effect precludes the possibility of splitting it open to check out for the different trephas, the severed spine or the hole in the brain membrane, so that if I'm nevertheless going ahead with the ceremonies, even though the possibility of trephus exists, that and it cannot be checked out because of these drushes, that they must remain complete. As we said, these are proofs that we are relying on the rov. Rav Acha suggests I could learn this from the case of the Soyer Hamishtaleach. The Rachmona Omar v'lokach es shnei hasi'irim. The pasuk with regard to Yom Kippur says, and he shall take two goats. The two goats, one of them is offered as a Soyer Lashem, and its blood is sprinkled in the Beis HaMikdash, in the inner sanctum as well. And the second one is a Soyer Lazazel, that's sent out of the Beis HaMikdash alive, walking out with an Ish Iti, an appointed man. And it's brought to a cliff located several kilometers outside of Yerushalayim. It's then pushed off the cliff, and it thereby atones for the sins of Israel. So the pasuk in describing the Soyer Mishlech says that you shall take two goats. Two, in other words, there's in two. One is Lashem, which is a formal korban. It's a korban chatas, and the other one is this sent away goat. We learn from this pasuk, shu shnehem shavim. They must both be equal. And that will tell us that the Soyer HaMishtaleach, even though it's not a sacrifice, it is to be treated with the same standard as I would the Soyer Lashem, the Korban. Balechush Dilma Chad Minayu Trefahu. Maybe the one of them is a Trefa. One of them meaning the one that's going to be La'azazel, maybe it's a Trefa. As far as the one that's shechted as a korban, so we already saw that with regard to korbanos, there are ways of checking out for the trephus and not having to rely on the rov. But when you're dealing with the lazozel, maybe it's a trepha, and yet we don't seem to be worried about that. Elolav mishum damrino zil basaruba. What is providing our sense of comfort is because we follow the majority. You might want to ask, well, who cares? Even if it is a trepha, it's not a korban, it's not a sacrifice. The Gemara answers, there's a rule concerning the Soyer Lazazel that says, Ha'ein Gorol Kovea Lazazel El Bedavah Haroi Lashem. The Gorol is the lot that's drawn, two lots, each one determining which one of the two goats is going to be Lashem and which one is going to be Lazazel. So it's taught here that the Gorol is ineffective in establishing which is which one is Lazazel, unless it, this animal, could have been chosen as Lashem, the actual sacrifice. So just like in the case of sacrifices, treifus is a problem, and by the Azazel also treifus would be a problem. V'chi teimo debad kinonle, you might say, well, we check it out. V'hotnan, to that we say there is no real way of checking out the Lazazel because of the following description. Lohoya magia lemachsisahar, the goat that's shoved off the cliff, it doesn't get even halfway down ad shenase evorim evorim until it's completely dismembered. And as a result of the fall and the impact when shoved off this cliff, the animal is torn apart, so to speak, by the force of gravity. So there's no possibility of checking it out. What are you going to reveal? The whole thing has been torn apart. There's nothing to discover. So how is it that we go ahead with the whole process of the Sawyer Lazazel? Maybe it's a treifa. So the answer to that is we are relying on the fact that rove goats are not treifas. Rav Mori Omar, Asyo Mimake Ove Ve'imo. The fact that we rely on a majority comes from the parsha in the Torah dealing with the prohibition of hitting one's parent. The Omar Achmona Katle. The Torah says that one who strikes his mother or father, leaving them bruised, is guilty of a death penalty. That death penalty is for one who struck his father. Ah, v'lechushdum olav avivhu. Maybe the man he struck, he thought it's his father, but maybe it's not his father. El olav mishum de'amrinan. Rather, how is it that we kill the offender anyway? It must be because we say that zil basar ruba, we follow the majority. V'rov be'ilois achar habal. A woman who bears a child, we assume that this is a child as a result of her having relations with her husband. So that, and that is based on the fact that even a promiscuous woman, most rove of her intimacies are with her husband. So a child that is brought up in a home with a woman who is married to a man, we, based on the rove, we say that this man is the child's father. The Gemara attempts to say, no, we don't see a rove reliance over here. Mimai, who says that this is a proof? Tilmo kigon shahoyu aviv v'imo chavushim beis hasurim. Maybe the halacha of maki aviv v'imo, that the offender is chayav a death penalty, is talking about the child of a couple who were incarcerated. Now, what's the point here? Here, if the mother and father were incarcerated, the mother had no chance of being with any other man. So it's not a function of a rove here. There is no other possibility. So, and only in that case will the child who struck his father be chayav a death penalty. The Gemara says, even in such a scenario, there is a possibility of the woman having been with other men. Afilu hachi. Ein apotropus la'arayas. There's no guarantor with regard to matters of promiscuity, which basically says, in other words, even if you have a couple that's incarcerated, she still has access, let us say, to intimacy with the guards, with others that are in the prison compound. Because of this comment, ein apotropus la'arayas, there's no guarantee with regard to issues of morality that one has remained pure. So maybe this child is not really the offspring of the man that he thinks is his father. So to that we say, Rov be'ilos achar habal. Rov, acts of intimacy that a woman does, even if she were immoral, would nevertheless have been with her husband. Rav Kahana Omar, Asyo mehureg es hanefesh. We can learn the idea of following the Rov based on the whole area of murder. The Omar Rachmona Katle. The Torah says regarding someone who is a murderer, he is to be executed. Ah, the Dilechush Dilma Trefo Have. Maybe the victim in this murder case was a person who was a Trefa. And the halacha is that even though it's forbidden to kill a Trefa, nevertheless, one who kills a person, a human being, also could be a Trefa if he has one of the organ deficiencies that are described later in the Masechta, that would classify the person as a treifa. And the halach is that a person who is a treifa, one who kills him, one who murders him, is not chayav a capital punishment. Once again, we're not giving any license to knocking off people who are treifas, but nevertheless, one who does such a thing is not chayav Misas based in. So one can always ask, whenever you have a murder case, maybe the victim was a trefa. And if that be the case, the murderer should not be subject to a death penalty. How is it that we do issue death penalties to murderers? Elolav mishum damrina zil basaruba. It must be because we follow the majority of people, and the majority of people are not trefas. Therefore, in all likelihood, the victim who was murdered was not a trefa, and therefore warranting a death penalty for the offender. Ah, you might say v'chitemo debadkinole, that we subject the victim to a post-mortem. Well, to that we say ha kominval. We wouldn't do a post-mortem to the victim, because that would be a desecration of the body. That would autopsies are something that defile, so to speak, ruin the body, and that's called nivul hames, and we wouldn't do that. V'chitemo, you might argue, but we should do that. Mishum ibud neshama dehai ninvale, in order to save the murderer from capital execution, from a capital punishment, we should subject the victim to nivul hames, because if we discover the victim to have been a trefa, we will thereby free the offender from a capital punishment. So at this point, we are holding that as far as a murder case, the fact that we execute people is not that we are basing ourselves on a rove, but it's basing ourselves on the victim having been exposed to a post-mortem and our establishing definitively that he was not a trefa. Not by relying on the rove. Well, the Gemara says, even if you do expose someone to a post-mortem, that's still not going to definitively show me that he wasn't a trefa. V'nechosh shema b'mokom sayef nekev have. Maybe the very spot that the murderer inserted his sword, or the bullet, if you will, it entered a part of the body of the victim where there had been a pre-existing hole. That pre-existing hole would have established the victim as being a trefa. So that even if we run a post-mortem, you'll find a hole into which the sword was inserted, but maybe that hole existed there before the sword was there, so that my post-mortem isn't going to establish definitively that he is not a trefa. Ah, so how is it that I execute the murderer? The answer to that is because we rely on the rove, and rove victims are not trefas. Rove people are not trefas. Ravina Omar Asyo me'edim zomimim. the fact that we rely on a majority, in a ruba de lesa kamon, can be learned from the parsha involving false witnesses. What's the case of false witnesses that we are interested in? If you have two witnesses that testify concerning so-and-so, that he is a murderer. If it turns out that these edim, that these witnesses were lying, based on their having been at a different place with others on the day that they claim the murder took place, the witnesses themselves will be put to death. Why? Since they were attempting to put a defendant to death, and they are subsequently proven to be false, they receive the punishment they were trying to mete out to others. The Omar Rachmona, V'asisen loy kasher zomam, we do to the witnesses that wanted to execute, wanted to kill others, we do unto them what they wanted to see done to others. Ah, so how is it that we give edim zomim in a murder case? How is it that we will execute them? Why not consider that maybe the one they were testifying about was himself a trefa? Maybe the alleged murderer was himself a trefa. So if they were trying to put to death, let us say, a trefa, we would not be able to put them to death if they are not trefas. Elolav, so how is it that we don't consider that the person that they were test the original defendant was a trefa? Elolav, mishum damrinon, zil, boser, ruba, we follow the rove, and the majority of people are not trefas. So they were trying to put to death a healthy person. Therefore, even if it turns out that they are healthy, they deserve to get what they were trying to do to someone else. V'chitemo debadkinon lei, you might say that, well, we are able to put the edim zomim to death because we check out the original defendant from having been a trefa. Now, this question is subsuming that what happened was is the witnesses had testified about so and so as being a murderer. The court executed the defendant, and then the witnesses are discovered to be false. So we are saying that we won't put them to death until we do a post-mortem on the original defendant that has already been executed. That's what is entailed in this question. V'chitemo debadkinon lei. So the Gemara says, well, that whole scenario doesn't even get started. There is no chance of doing a post-mortem on the defendant because of the following rule. V'hotanya, ribi omer. Ribi is an expression meaning the great man. There's no name here, but a great Tana said, lo hargoi neherogin. If the original defendant is still alive, then, and only then, the edim zomimim can be subject to the punishment that we call v'sisim lo kasher zomim. In other words, only then can they be subjected to execution. However, hor goy, if they were responsible for the death of the original defendant, in other words, if their falseness was not revealed until after the original defendant was actually executed, then there's no din of Vasisim lo kasher zomam. And this is all based on the way we darshan psukim. So, as far as the suggestion that we do a post-mortem on the victim, if it comes to that, then the whole case of Adam, the Adam Zomim, comes to a halt. In other words, the false witnesses will not themselves be subject to a death penalty. Rav Ashi Omar Asyo Mishchito Atzmo. The term Atzmo is, we are talking about, our sugya has been talking about halachas of Shchita. So if you want to establish that we follow a rove, we can actually learn that principle from the realm of Shechita itself, namely from the topic itself that we are involved with. The Omar Rachmana Shchot Ve'echol. The Torah says, slaughter an animal and then eat the meat. Ah, v'lechu shema b'moki nekev ko shochit. Maybe the point on the neck of the animal where I inserted the knife, there was a pre-existing hole. And if that be the case, the animal was already a trefa, so how can I possibly eat the meat? Elolav, mishum damrina zil basaruba. Rather, it must be, the reason we're allowed to eat the meat is that we follow the rove, and the majority of animals do not have holes in their neck organs. Omar Rav Ashi, Amrisa l'shmaitza kamei Rav Kahana. Rav Ashi says, I said over this teaching to Rav Kahana. V'amri law, another version by way of names. Rav Kahana kamei Rav Simi, that Rav Kahana taught over this teaching, or said over this teaching in the presence of Rav Simi. V'omar lei, and he responded, V'dilmo hecha de efsher. Efsher. Hecha de lo efsher, lo efsher. Maybe our whole approach to the issue of following a rove, that's only when it was lo efsher, there was no way to check out the situation. However, where it's possible to check out the situation, we do not rely on the rove. And an example of hecha de efsher, where it's possible levarer, where it's possible to check out, an example of that would be with the katan and ketana. In other words, if the katan and ketana had done yibum, we will not let them live together until they develop into their adult years, and then we see for sure that he is not a saurus and that she is not an islandess. De'i lo teimo hochi. If you don't accept this approach, that, you know, where it's only where it's impossible to check things out, then we rely on the rove. Le Rabbi Meir de chayesh limiuta. According to Rabbi Meir, who is stringent, who does not follow the rove, he doesn't follow the rove automatically. For example, in the case of the katan and the ketana, he would not have let them live together. He takes into consideration, in his legal formulation, he takes into consideration the minority of cases and lets the minority situation play a role in his legal conclusions. So Rabbi Meir, who does Choshesh Lita, Hochi Nami Delo Ochil Bisra, are you going to suggest that since he's Choshesh for the meat, he would never eat meat? Because of the possibility that where the knife was inserted into the neck, there had been a pre-existing hole? V'chitema Hochi Nami, and if you say, that's right, Rabbi Meir did not eat meat, well then, Pesach v'kot shemayi kol ameimar. What about eating of the korban Pesach, where the Torah expects the owner to eat his korban Pesach, and kotshim are sacrifices. Many sacrifices must be eaten, and there are psukim that indicate these the need to eat these things, and these are sacrificed. These are slaughtered animals. Obviously, Rabbi Meir would advocate the eating of those things. Ella, hecha de efsher efsher. Rather, our approach to this, to the matter of relying on a majority, states that where it's possible to check something out, we will check it out. Hecha de lo efsher, lo efsher. Where it's impossible to check something out, like in the case of the shechita, so lo efsher, we don't, it's impossible, and we will rely on the rove. Hochinami, there too, over here, in the case of standard shechita, not just Pesach and Kotchim, we will say, hecha de efsher efsher, hecha de lo efsher, lo efsher. Where it's possible to check something out, we will go all the way and check it out, and where it's impossible, we will rely on the rove. Namely, even Rabbi Meir has a point in halacha that he will rely on the rov, and that's in a case where it's lo efsher. Now Rashi goes a step further, and he points out that this last piece of Gemara was showing that the last piece of Gemara was attempting to show that we don't necessarily we can't necessarily conclude from all of these proofs that there's an across the boards reliance on the rov, but rather we rely on the rov only where it's impossible to check out the situation. And that analysis would certainly be appropriate for Shitas Rabbi Meir, who is Choshesh Lemiu. But now, if we look in the Rashi, on the fourth line from the top of Yud Beis Amud Aleph, Redidon Nami Hechi Yalfinon Minei. According to us, therefore, how can we rely on those cases where it's possible to check something out and then assume that we will rely on the rov? So we don't learn from those cases where it can be checked out. Elovadai halocha lemoshe misinaihi desamchinen aruba afilu hecho deefsher. Here Rashi goes, explains information, presents information that one could not have seen in the Gemara itself. And he therefore, and Rashi tells us that according to us, namely those of us who aren't following in Rebbe Meir's footsteps, who those of us who are not Choshesh Lemiut, will say that the concept of relying on a majority is something that's part of an oral tradition. Afilu hecho de efsher, and this is very dramatic. Rashi says, even where it is possible to check out the situation, you're not forced. You're not forced to check it out. Inami, another approach to this matter is that achrei rabim lahatos. This was a pasuk that was quoted at the beginning of the sugya. That this pasuk covers all cases of rov. Mashma. It implies bein ruba de ise kamon, bein ruba de lese kamon. It implies all cases of majorities, even majorities that are not in front of us. And this is a turnaround from the way the sugya opened up by saying that the pasuk of Achrei Rabim Lahatos was only addressing the case of ruba de ise kamon. Here we're saying even in the case of ruba de lese kamon, this pasuk will apply. Demai shno hai mehai. What's different between this kind of rov and that kind of rov? In other words, the pasuk says Achrei Rabim, follow the majority. The pasuk itself doesn't indicate any distinction. Ve'aho milso samchinon, and based on this, we rely in our kashrus practices. V'lo badkinon kol yudches trefos. There are 18 different possibilities of trefus arising. And when we slaughter animals, no one checks all 18 different parts of the anatomy of the animal in order to establish that there is no trefus. Why is it that we don't check them all out? The reason for that is because we rely on the rov. Unikuvas harea, the truth is that we check the lungs out of slaughtered animals. Mishum deshchiach ba reusa badkinon, because with regard to the lungs, it's common to find holes in the lungs, and a hole in the lung is an example of a trefus. And if you should have a situation that you, let us say, slaughtered an animal and you didn't get a chance to check out the lungs, and whatever, the lungs are not there anymore and you can't check them out, misaklo, you can still eat the animal. Disamchinon aho, we rely on this, in other words, the teaching that we just indicated that you follow the rov, whether it's, even if it's a ruba the lesser kamon. The Rav Huna, and we also rely on Rav Huna's teaching, Diomar Nishchato, once an animal is slaughtered, if you know the slaughtering was done properly, Becheskas Heter Omedes, it is assumed to be having a status of that which is allowed. The Ein Mefarsim Adover, and Rashi's pointing out that one should not let this point be very well known, because people could end up taking advantage of this. Very likely that once you tell us this halacha, even when you can check out the lungs, people will get lazy, so to speak, and rely on the rove and not do the checking when you do have that option or that opportunity. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.